Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next couple hours, we're going to be talking about cars, and you're certainly welcome to join us. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Gil will answer the phone, and then we'll put you in queue, and then he'll say in my headsets, we got John next, and then I'll go to John, and that's kind of how we do it. So tell me about the year, the make, and the model of the car, and then tell me what the symptoms are, what the question is, and that's the easiest thing we do. I have a couple of things that I cut out every once in a while, and I use them on the show because they're funny and they're thought-provoking, I think. One of them is a good example. The Tesla claims that the Model S will do 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds and has a top speed of 200 miles an hour. I'm wondering why. Now, I like speed, so 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, that's pretty strong, and 200 miles an hour, but who are they fishing for? And this is a car that doesn't fit the mainstream. It doesn't, you know, but it Teslas are nice cars. There's no question about it. I just wonder about the marketing reasoning for that. 0 to 60 in 2 seconds and top speed of 200 miles an hour. I guess it's working for them because they're doing really well. In Phoenix, of course, wearing potholders on your hands during the summertime for your steering wheel is something that you'll see every once in a while. I've said that before, and I've never really seen it, but I did last year. I saw an elderly man driving his car they looked like potholders. They could have been just big, bulky gloves, but it was a hot day, and I understood it. And then one of the things we hear in the auto repair industry is I have a bumper-to-bumper warranty. And it's fine that they talk about a bumper-to-bumper warranty, but in reality, there's lots and lots of exclusions. So there's at least a 50-50 chance on whatever the malady might be with your car that it's not covered under some exclusion. And it's kind of really strange how that works, and trying to get common sense into the aftermarket warranty world is something that we've not been able to accomplish. So it's a difficult situation because the shop gets put in the middle between the consumer and his aftermarket warranty company. And we end up being the bearer of the bad news, and sometimes in an effort to kind of mitigate the issue or to mediate the issue, but it's just something none of us that I know of in the auto repair industry really relish. And then there's a matter of synonyms and words. So we have parts in the car that can be known by various words, and it seems that sometimes that becomes a problem. What we call something, and it's just a really difficult issue, and I'll tell you what I think is, in the past I have purchased aftermarket warranties for vehicles that I've owned, and I remember once that I bought a aftermarket warranty policy on a Bounder motorhome, and this was in the 90s, and it didn't cover the water pump. Now, this isn't the water pump in the coach that provides water to the toilets and the sinks and stuff. This is the water pump on the engine. But it covered powertrain, and which is the engine and the transmission and the differential. But in small letters, there was an exclusion for the water pump and all related things. So it was just an interesting thing. But today, I don't know that you would ever find an auto repair shop owner that has an aftermarket warranty unless it was given to them by somebody for free. Because that makes a big difference. We had a situation where in another town in Arizona, the shop was working on a vehicle, and it had an airbag light on, and through the process of the diagnostics, where you go through this process to determine, is the module bad, is one of the inputs bad, is one of the outputs bad, because you have three different areas of this airbag module, as you do in most everything with your car. So the module was determined to be defective, and they actually ran the test with two different technicians. So they went down, and the only place you can buy an airbag control module is at the dealer, so they went to the dealer, They had the old one in their hand. They gave them the VIN number. The dealer said, this is the replacement one. Everything is fine. They plugged the new one in. And when the technician goes to turn the key on, start the car, and back it out of the bay, as soon as he turns the key on, all the airbags in the Suburban blow up. All of them. Now, he ends up with some blood on his face, and obviously he's beat up because really unexpectedly he has the airbags blow. And not to mention that this is a multi-$1,000 repair because we're going to have to replace all the airbags. So it happens, and it's not a completely foolproof system. Time will tell on what ultimately happens on this one. But it and here's the deal. The airbag has certain parameters before it can deploy. There has to be a drastic reduction in speed. It can't be 60, 59, 58, 57. It can't be that. It has to be where you're doing 50 miles an hour, and in the blink of an eye, you've dropped to 31 miles an hour, so you've hit something. There's a tremendous loss of speed over a short period of time. None of those things occurred during this process. So there's also an airbag module. It's called an event data recorder, EDR, and it showed that the airbags had been deployed, but it didn't show what the parameters were. Now, normally, those of us that have access to the airbag control module, we can plug into it, and we can talk to the computer, and we can determine what it is that happened. And it's not uncommon for the airbag module to say, okay, the vehicle's doing 61 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden the steering wheel jerks to the right, the brakes are applied, and then at 61 miles an hour, in the blink of an eye, it drops to 31 miles an hour. So it's hit something that's very hard and not very movable, and there's been an instantaneous loss of 30 miles an hour in the blink of an eye. And during this period of time, the airbag module says, oop, we need airbags. So it's going to pop the airbags, and hopefully it's going to catch your face before it hits the steering wheel or the dash. This is something that happens all the time. But don't, when you're in an accident and you're going to be questioned by somebody, you always have the right to remain silent. And it's better to just shut the hell up as opposed to lie about whether you were wearing your seatbelt. Because there's no question whether you were wearing your seatbelt. I'll give you an example. The driver and the passenger in a car that I remember were adamant that they were buckled up before the crash, but they were both found in the back seat. And so how is it that happens? And so it was a rear-end collision, but they were both in the back seat. They wouldn't be in the back seat if they had their seatbelts on because they'd still be in the front seat. So I don't even know why they decided not to tell the truth. Another one is that there's tension and stretch marks of the actual seatbelt near the rings or the loops that it travels through. Because when the airbag goes off, there's a lot going on. And when you come to an abrupt stop, the airbag module on newer cars straps you in tighter. And when it does, it's kind of like a chain running through a winch. It's going to pull down real hard. Well, we're going to see those marks. And if you were supposed to be in the airbag, or if you were supposed to be in the seatbelt, we would expect to see those. We would also expect to see bruises and belt marks across your chest. We also kind of know that if the seatbelt is found buckled, that you weren't wearing it. And the event data recorder is going to snitch you off. So just, it's not a great idea to lie about whether you were wearing your seatbelt or not, because the seatbelt, that's the first thing the computer looks at is do you have your seatbelt on? Because if you're not there, then popping the airbags, it doesn't make any sense. For instance, in the passenger side, if you have a crash and there's no butt in the seat on the passenger side, then there's no airbag deployment because there's nobody there. But a lot of times, the seat a mechanism will tell the computer, yes, there's a butt in the seat, and it could very well be your dog or something like that. And then depending on the cars and depending on the year, make and model and all that other stuff, it may or may not throw the airbag on the passenger side because it sees what it appears, what might appear to be somebody sitting there. Those are the kinds of things. So, and last but not least, my crazy, you know, my head works in funny ways. Have you ever been driving down the road and you see a dump truck in front of you and it says not responsible for broken windshields? That tickles me when I read that. First of all, dump trucks and all trucks are supposed to have the load contained. That's all there is to it. We're not allowed to just drool sand or oil or water on the road from the bed of our truck. We're not allowed to do that. So when they say we're not responsible for broken windshields, you're driving down the road and you've got people in the car, and then all of a sudden the front passengers and one of the back passengers sees the tailgate of this dump truck kind of shake, and then all of a sudden there's these rocks that slide off the back of the dump truck, and then they hit the road and they bounce up high and they bounce low, and all of a sudden there's tick, tick, and you've got two dings in your windshield. Well, you have people that were there, you have cameras, you have all that kind of stuff. So that sign doesn't mean anything because they are responsible for making sure that there's no shift of the load and they're not allowed to drop stuff on the roadway. That's all there is to it. You're not allowed to do that. So if you create a hazard because you didn't sweep the back of the dump truck off and you're going to drive down the road dropping boulders because you're hauling a whole bunch of ABC, there's a good chance you're going to get into trouble. Now, most insurance companies won't fight about it, but the idea is it's a stupid sign because you can't say, if I break your windshield, I'm responsible for that. That's all there is to it, and it's my job to make sure that my load is secure. So just funny stuff that makes me laugh and makes my wife call me names and stuff like that. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've had and one of the things that I'm regularly talk about is your owner's manual, and it's how important it is to read your owner's manual and to understand the parameters, because our industry has now taken many in our industry have taken it upon themselves to interpret the manual to benefit them. So it's not uncommon for your manual to say that you don't do any fluid changes or flushes. And that's cooling system flush, transmission flush, transfer case flush, differential flush, those kinds of things, until 100,000 miles. But you might run across a service rider who tells you that you need a transmission service at 30. And if you don't know that the manual calls for it at 100, then you're likely to say, go ahead and do that. And that is exactly the problem in our industry. We are used to seeing you every 3,000 miles for an oil change. Every other oil change, we rotate your tires. And then we get to service your fluids, and there's anywhere from 3 to 5 of them, every 30K. But today, and for the last 5, maybe even 10 years, those fluid changes went to 100. So we've lost lots of business. I no longer get to flush your wallet. And understand I'm making a joke about that. I'm not allowed to flush your car, whatever, or your wallet at 30, 60, or 90. I get to do it at 100. I mean, I get to provide those services to you, but with new fluids, new synthetic fluids, with just all kinds of enhancements to your car, I only get to do that at every 100K, and a lot of you don't even keep your car to 100K, and you get another one. Those are the kinds of things. So 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, it's 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us, it's a car question time. I'm a master technician. I've been working on cars when I first started in 1968 at a gas station in Tempe. And so, and we now and continue to run an auto repair shop in Tempe. So, and it's not about the shop. It's about you and your concerns and trying to help you, guide you on what's best for you and not necessarily what's best for perhaps the person you chose to service your car. Those are the kinds of things. But I'm a big boy, and if they're doing a good job and you're a little hesitant, I'll let you know that I think they're doing a good job. And then if you've been told something that I don't agree with, I'll give you my version, and you can make up your mind. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around in Phoenix since 1968. I had a call the other day from a gentleman who said, I just love Automatic Transmission Exchange. I took my car in there. I had a problem. Not only did they fix it, but they test drove it. And then they called later to find out if everything was still okay. So I'm really, really happy that Phil and his staff are as qualified and are as just well-rounded as they are. So leaking, it won't shift right, I got a light on, I got a transmission code, whatever. Automatic Transmission Exchange would be a good place to go. Byron, good morning. How can we help you this morning?
Yes, good morning, Mark. I'm a snowbird, and I only put maybe 1,500 miles on my car. And it seems like every time I go into the shop or the dealership, they want to keep on changing my oil. I know the recommended is probably 6,000 miles in my manual. It's an older car, an 07. What's your recommendation? Do I need to change it every year?
And I think we had an email about this, didn't we?
Yes, that was mine, yes.
Okay. And then let me just kind of fill everybody else in. Our industry has decided that we're going to change the parameters in your owner's manual to benefit us and not you. And so I've made it very clear about that. And I'm constantly referring to telling people, look at your manual. That's the Bible. Do what it says, not what you're told. But, Byron, you've got me with my pants down on this one because... This is the first one.
Oil may be different than all the other fluids just because of condensation, because of heat, and because of storage and all that stuff, but I don't know what the answer is.
Well, and your question in the email was that you always say consult the manual, but then here's the other side of the coin, and changing it annually, even though you have 1,200 to 1,500 miles on it annually. I'm going to go with the one time annually. I'm not going to go with the multiple times on a car that's only being driven that much. So I'm going to step back from the manual and say that you will be served once a year if that's what you want to do. We did talk, and I think I sent you an email back. I answer a lot of these. So it's important to go through a heat cycle in the car. So do that the best you can. Don't just drive to your girlfriend's house or to the liquor store or to the pool hall or go play golf and it's all within a mile, because that's not the kind of heat cycle we need. Fully operational, 220 degrees, and then bring it back down. But in this particular case, I don't really care what your manual says. You could do that, but I'm quite sure your manual calls for an oil change at least at 3,000. And again, you just said 1,200 to 1,500 miles a year. So I say once a year, and in this particular example, I'm going to say forget the manual. Let's use more common sense.
Well, thank you for your honesty, and I appreciate the knowing that the $30 or $50 I spend is worthwhile.
Well, and that's okay. You just pulled my pants down in front of everybody and embarrassed me because I had I always say check your manual, but this is the first time. And I'm glad you called. This is the first time I've had this conversation, and I was wrong in this situation. I'm not going to follow the manual. I'm going to follow common sense, and of course, my common sense may be a little different, but that's okay. I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you, but I do have your phone number.
I'm fine with that, and I'm glad I got the recommendation that I sort of have been going along with, but I certainly will follow the manual regarding the other fluids because I think it's wise.
Yeah. In your particular case, you're just not going through too many heat cycles in a year. So you're going to probably build up more water than normal. So besides that, it's how much is an oil change? $30, $35 for conventional?
Yeah.
So that's a good. And on top of that, and here's my other reason why I'm backing away from looking at the manual, is during an oil change, we're going to check your belts, your hoses, your fluids, and your tires and your brakes if we can see them. So that inspection's kind of cool. And it's free, and it's part of the oil change, so I don't see that there's... Now, the only thing would change my mind is if your wife called me, and she was mad. And that would be the only reason I changed my mind.
I told her I was leaving and I'd be back in 2 hours, and don't worry, I'm fine. I'm just listening to the radio.
Okay. All righty. All righty, Byron. Thank you very much. Thank you. All righty. Speaking of good shops, and I'm proud of the shops that I refer you to, because I get lots of nice accolades about the shop. Blackwell Automotive, he's up on 40th and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends. We're two crazy guys cut from the same cloth. We both have really good automotive backgrounds. We're both very, very smart. We're both ASE certified masters, all that kind of stuff. We know right from wrong, and no young three-whiskered kid that just got out of trade school is going to tell us something that we know isn't true, and we will politely correct them. But Blackwell's a good shop. He's the only one up in that North Scottsdale area that I can recommend. There's lots of shops up there, and if you have one that I don't recommend and you like them, then stay there. That's okay. The relationship between you and the shop is very important. But my promise to you on our best shops is this. If you have a problem with the shop and some dispute resolution process says to the shop, write them a check for $200, and the shop doesn't, I'll write you the check for $200. I'm guaranteeing you're going to be put back up to $5,000. And here's the good news. I've been talking about good shops in Phoenix since 1988, and I've never paid that money to anybody. However, I came close. One of the shops did something wrong, and he was in an area of a car that he shouldn't have been, and I was prepared to write the check, and at the last minute, the shop decided to write the check themselves. But I was prepared. I was talking to the customer. That's as close as I've ever come. So you have my promise. These are the best I can find. These are friends of mine as well. So, and they are friends of mine, many of them, after they applied to be on the best car repair shops list from Mark Salem. So 602-508-0960 if you want to talk cars and have a car question. One more time, 602-508-0960. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 12 on KKNT talking about cars. My email address is mark@marksalem.com in case you want to send me an email. We'll be back right after this. No, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're talking about cars. If you have a car question, or maybe a dispute, or maybe an argument between your wife or your husband or your kids or your neighbor, then ask. Then give us a call and ask us. We'll see if we can come to some kind of a conclusion. We typically don't finish these kinds of things, but we're welcome to. I'm happy to chime in, is what I really need to say. Okay, Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 and Bell Road. He's on the northeast corner, been around a very long time. He opened his doors in 1987, so he'll be here for a while. He works on both domestic and import vehicles, both gas and diesel. He has ASE-certified technicians, which means your vehicle is going to be looked at, diagnosed, and repaired by a well-trained and certified professional technician. So, again, Kurt's Auto Repair is on I-17 and Bell Road. He's a good guy, and in that general vicinity, he's one of the best shops I know. Okay. I am surrounded by engineers in my life, and these guys are typically accident reconstructionists and stuff like that, and they know stuff about stuff that I don't know anything about. So if you remember at the beginning of the show, I said something about Tesla doing from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. So this is what I get from one of my engineer buddies, it makes sense to me. Hopefully it will to you. Tesla is accelerating to 60 miles an hour in 2 seconds would be an acceleration rate of 1.4 Gs. Means they have some pretty fancy tires, since road tire friction is usually half that much. So, Jim, let's assume that this is an all-wheel drive car. Does it change that? And, of course, these guys have my cell phone number so they can comment. And a lot of times I can't read what they say because they use bad words and they make fun of me. But, Jim, I'm asking you, if it was an all-wheel drive and it just had more than 2 drive wheels, all 4 of them were drive wheels, would that change this and make it sound a little more palatable? But basically from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, he's saying that they better have some really sticky tires and they better have a really sticky roadway, something completely abnormal to what we normally drive on, something that's real sticky for, like I say, the tire and the roadway, then they could do that. Otherwise, they would lose traction and they would and not be able to hit that. So I don't know. But so that's the question. And you can either text me with answer or you can call in, you big chicken, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Harold.
Harold, good morning.
Oh, hi, Mark. Hey, I have a lady friend up here in North Scottsdale that has a terrible dilemma. About a year ago, she bought a new Ford Escape, and since that time, she has had to take it into the dealer at least twice to get wiring repaired because apparently rodents are getting into her engine compartment and tearing this thing apart, and she has spent approximately $2,000 in 1 year trying to get this thing running well. Do you know of anything you can do to help prevent rodents from doing this?
Yes, but let me ask you a question first. Sure. Normally, her car insurance would take care of this. She didn't report it to her own insurance company?
Well, I don't think she did. I'll check with her on that.
Yeah, because normally rodent damage is covered. If you have full coverage and if it's a new Ford Escort, and they're pretty tasty, by the way. Animals seem to like wiring in general, and I'm making fun of Fords right now, but no, this is a problem. A good rodent guy would have the things. I'll tell you the cowboy way. The cowboy way is, this is a true story. Somebody wired metal, a strip of metal all the way around their car, and they hooked the car and this other piece of metal to a wall outlet. So when the animal stood on one piece of metal and reached for the car was the last second of their life. Now, it created a little bit of smoke and a bad smell. But the idea is, now, a lot of people will oftentimes mix a pepper substance with water and spray it on the engine compartment, and that will keep them away. There's other people who put lights underneath the car thinking that is, but you can Google rodents eating my wires on my car or my truck, and there's going to be all kinds of stuff there. She could, there is something that she can be helped with, but I think I would advise her to find a rodent guy who has fixed this problem before. And perhaps maybe that it's just a matter of making sure that there's no rodents that can get into the garage that she parks it.
Well, that's unfortunate in that she has a carport.
Okay.
So the vehicle is open to the environment 24 hours a day.
Okay. All right. In that case, then there's probably going to be some traps, and it's probably something that you're not going to get the generation after generation after generation coming over and eating up the wiring. But two things. Have her call a couple or look up a couple of rodent companies and then go to their reviews and make sure that they're good and they do what they say. The second thing is ask her to, if she could call her insurance agent and say, are these bills that I've already paid covered, and is it too late to submit them? And I think that would be good advice for her. But I think that's the option she's had.
Thank you very much, Mark.
All right, you're welcome, Harold. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. So when it comes to having your car repaired, I have a list of good shops you can find on marksalem.com. That's my name, Mark Salem, Salem spelled like the cigarette.com. And Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley is one of those. He's family-owned and operated, and I've known Tom since 1983. He sold me my first Scope, and he could make that machine dance, and he could use that machine in a diagnostic way that to this day I envied him. So no matter what kind of repair or car you have, there's a good chance, a very good chance, that they have staff that's capable of working on your car. Their technicians are ASE Master Certified Technician, and I can assure you, Tom's like the most of the rest of us. We know right from wrong, and no young buck's going to sell us on the idea that having a tire fall off after he just rotated the tires is something that it wasn't his fault. So it's just a matter of we've been there and we've done that. Okay, we're talking about this Tesla going from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. So here's the newest ones. I said to this engineer I'm talking to, well, if it was an all-wheel drive instead of just a two-wheel drive, would that would give it more traction. And he uses bad words, and I'm not going to repeat those, but it says, no, all four tires spinning is still 0.7 Gs. You cannot accelerate greater than that unless you have, quote, soft tires. So this Tesla 0 to 60 would suggest that there's more to the subject. Perhaps the roadway was grittier. Perhaps there was a special soft tire that gave this car the ability to accelerate twice as fast as a normal tire would let them. So it's 0.7 Gs on a normal tire, and they would have to have double that kind of tire in its ability to be sticky in order to pull a 2 second 0 to 60. So I don't know, and I don't care, but I deal with engineers, and these guys are all great guys, but they're sure having a lot of fun because there's and he goes, it also means they could do a burnout with all four tires, but then there would also be no directional stability. And what he means by that is when you got all four tires of your car spinning, it's not really like that you can aim it somewhere. If they're all spinning, then as soon as you turn left or turn right, the car's going to go where it wants to go. So the stability, and then the computer's going to have a tough time breaking this tire to make you go a little bit right, and just about at time it does that, then all of a sudden you have to break this tire to straighten it out. And this happens 10 times or more in the blink of an eye with computers on stability control. So we've got computers in there, but it's just that it just boggles my mind that we're 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. That's the whole issue about it. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or if you have a comment. 602-508-0960. And I'm not going to get into the Tesla discussion because the guys that have Teslas that are friends of mine are just like rabid defenders of their car. And I would be too if I spent that much money on a car. I'd just as soon drive a big one-ton dually. You know what I mean? I don't care. If we have a crash with a Tesla, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be a little safer than they are. Nevertheless, that's just personal choice, and that's the same way with the rest of you. You all have the chance. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. Been around a long time, since 1982, and I've known the family, the Nide family, since the 70s. So I know that they know the difference between right and wrong. I know that Automotive Dynamics, they don't pay their staff or their technicians a commissions or a percentage of the repair bill. Therefore, they can be assured that they're not going to sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. Now, there's other shops that do that, but they have checks and balances in the system. So if you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, I can only recommend Automotive Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So Grand and 99th Avenue would be the place that you would go. When you pick a repair shop, you should always make sure that there is a high level of discussion back and forth. Ladies, whatever you do, don't come go to your shop and tell them your husband said that he wanted them to replace all the spark plug wires. This happened the other day to us. All the spark plug wires on the car because he diagnosed that as being a problem. We politely said, would you share the problem with us? Now, we would expect the driver to say it runs rough intermittently. And sometimes it runs rough, like it's not on, all the spark plugs aren't working. And sometimes it runs perfectly smooth and nice and accelerates nice, but sometimes it goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that kind of stuff. That's kind of what we need. When you come in and tell us that your husband wants us to put spark plug wires in, we're kind of holding our breath because we know that there's a 50-50 chance he's wrong. And then the argument starts. And I think what happens is there's an assumption that if I tell them put spark plug wires on, I'm probably going to be right, but you may not. But you still have to pay the diagnostic fee the next time. And there is a diagnostic charge, but the shop's going to stand up and say, wait a minute, it's not the plugs. You have a bad coil frame, and the coil itself, spark is jumping to the metal frame. All I have to do is replace the coil. That's it. And so those are the kinds of things And I know, women, that you're in the middle of those kinds of things, but if you could just help us out and tell us what the symptoms are, and then we can give you a diagnostic cost, and typically it's, there's going to be a range. And those are the kinds of things that that we hope that we'll be able to work through. Not too long ago, two times in 1 week, we got a vehicle where someone had tried but couldn't get something done. And in both of those cases, it was a spark plug that had, the spark plug was deep within a hole, and one of them was in the vehicle and one of them was in a motorcycle. And somebody had just boogered up everything. And I think the bid on both of those was pull the head off and fix the spark plug hole. That's the worst case scenario. On the car, the bill was about $1,600. On the motorcycle, the bill was probably close to $1,000, because the head was going to have to either be replaced because the spark plug threads were wiped out and the spark plug was galled in there, and we couldn't go to an oversize. At the end of the day, and through the grace of God, we were lucky. We were able to punch the center of the spark plug out and then put an easy out in there and bring the spark plug out. And in both cases, there was good threads left over, but we still had a bunch of trash inside the engine that we needed to get out before we started it up. Because you remember I said we punched the center of the spark plug into the cylinder. So, and with the cameras that we have, we can go inside and we can look around inside and we can find the pieces and all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't happen very often. I would say 8 out of 10 times we have to take the head off. Because now, if somebody would have just not tried and failed, then our success rate is significantly higher. We probably can pull those kinds of, especially on the Fords that blow the center out of the electrodes, or they throw the spark plug out and it needs new threads. We have all the equipment. Our industry has all the equipment necessary to put that back together without doing major disassembly of the engine. So be wary, because I know that most of the shops that I commiserate with, if you call us and tell us you have a four-cylinder Honda and there's a spark plug that's been stripped or broken off or whatever, we're going to hit you in the face with a big estimate, a worst-case scenario. We need to open that door and make sure you know this is the worst-case scenario. So it's take the head off, maybe weld the hole up, maybe re-drill and tap the spark plug hole, or maybe replace the head with a used head. There's a lot of things that can be, but we want you to know what the top end is. And of course, if we end up fixing it for $350, then we're heroes. But we're not going to tell you about the $350. We're just going to have that in our hip pocket. Nah, you're thinking, and I agree with you, there's probably somebody out there that's going to charge you the $2,000 on the worst case scenario when it really was the $350 repair. Yeah, here's the problem with that. Any good technician could look that vehicle over and know the head wasn't removed, know that this fix was done on the outside, know that there's new threads in there, know that they put a helicoil in there. So you always run a risk with something like that. The best thing to do when you're looking for a car shop is look at their reviews, but make sure that they have a couple of bad reviews. I looked at a company the other day that I was thinking about having paint my house, and up in Payson, and there was four or five of them that had glowing reviews, and nobody said anything bad about them. And most of the reviews weren't real specific. It was just real glowing, great people, stuff like that. I found one that had two bad reviews, but had like 61 four and five stars. And the two bad reviews reflected poorly. One of them was reflected poorly on someone at the business, and then the other reflected poorly on the person who wrote it, as far as Mark was concerned. So those are the kinds of things that you want to. And if plan B is stop by a couple of local auto parts store and ask them who pays their bill, who has technicians for a very long time, who treats their staff really good, who doesn't return parts that have obviously been installed and then put back in the box and the shop is lying. Oh, no, we ordered this, but she never showed up. No, you ordered this, the box is open, and the part's been installed. So you used my part to diagnose the car, and now you want to return a part that you installed on a car and have me sell it to somebody else. So that's the conversation that typically happens with the parts vendor and the shop when we start using their parts to diagnose your car. I'll tell you honestly, that happens once or twice a year for us. There are times we just don't have the sophisticated equipment on this car that represents one out of 1,000 cars on the road. And so if it's a mass airflow sensor, then we'll just call the parts vendor and say, can we try one? And what we'll do is we'll put our business card inside the box, and if you sell it and then it comes back as bad, I'll buy it then. And many times the vendor will allow that to happen. Sometimes they won't. And the shop has a do we send them to a shop that has the necessary equipment, or do we say to them, we're 99% sure it's a mass airflow sensor, but if we do the mass airflow sensor and the labor and the diagnosis, you're $800 in the hole, and we could be wrong. Well, that's okay to have that discussion as long as everybody knows it. Who's on the phone?
Say hello to Robert.
Robert, good morning.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Good, good, good. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I had a Cadillac converter stolen this week, and I was curious about what the loss dates. I had four converters on my truck. They cut one side off, which took two converters. And when I got to the muffler shop, he said he could put one on the side that they stole that would replace the two, but he couldn't take the one of them from the other side and put it on the side that was stolen.
Those decisions are made by the shop, because there's other shops that are going to be the opposite of that. There's a lot of shops that are going to say, I'm going to save you a lot of trouble. This is what I would say to you. I'm going to save you a lot of trouble. I'm going to put it back the way it came from the factory. That's what's going to happen at emissions. So if they've got two cats side by side, then that's what I'm going to put back on. Let me ask you a question. Is your insurance company involved?
No.
Why not?
Because I have high deductible. It cost me basically $300 to put a converter on. I didn't have the sensors put on. He wasn't able to do that.
Okay.
So I've got to have that done.
Okay.
But no, I got high deductible.
Did you get a new converter for $300?
I believe so. I didn't ask.
Okay.
I thought it was. It looked new. I got underneath it this morning and looked at it, and it looked new.
Okay. Usually they're just more than that. The installation of the – and obviously we have to match the pipe because they cut it, so we're going to have to extend the pipe. We're going to have to do some welding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we've done all of those. But I would first say let's put it back the way it was. But if you went into an auto parts store and you looked at some of the drawings, here's the deal. Your truck may have been made in December – let's just pretend December of 14. But yet in February of 15, that same truck ended up with one cat where it was two before. So that kind of a close thing, I'd probably take the chance. I'd make sure the customer was involved.
1 minute.
But really and truly, you probably ought to put it back the way that that it was now, just because I think there's a 50-50 chance down the road later you're going to have to spend some money to do it again. And that's my suggestion to you.
Okay, so basically, to put the sensors on, I need to come to a repair shop and put those in?
Well, yeah.
Because I got the engine lights on.
Okay, but those just, you drill a hole in it, and then you weld those on, and then you just screw your O2 sensors into them.
Okay.
I mean, that's really not that big of a deal. But you need to know where to do that. And so there is a specific area of the converter that we need to put the sensors in. Sometimes they're in front of this converter, and sometimes they're not. But I got to run, but thank you very much. And if you want to continue the conversation, mark@marksalem.com is my email address, and I'll guide you the very best I can. We have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we're going to come back in a few minutes with another hour. And welcome, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, we have another hour of car talk. And if you want to join us, you can. Leonard's on the phone. I'm going to get to him in just a minute. But all you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And just kind of your make and model, and let's talk about the issue. I just wanted to follow up with Robert on his catalytic converter. Robert, there are certain parameters that we have with respect to tailpipe emissions, and they might let you have a number that's between 10 and 20. So less than 10 is no good, and more than 20 is no good. My fear is if unless you put it back the way it was, it's entirely possible that you fall outside the parameters, which would then make it where you couldn't pass emissions in your existing state, and you would have to go back in and make it right. I'm just real uncomfortable, and I'm real aware that a modification, an upstream air leak from a bad gasket can thoroughly mess up the O2 sensor readings. So I'm just worried that you might pay a price later. So anyway, it's up to you. 602-508-0960. We have four lines open. I'm going to go talk to Leonard. Leonard, good morning.
Well, good morning, Mark. I've got a 2015 Chevy Tahoe, and the electronic power steering assist went out. And there is something interesting about that story, too, because I had it to the dealership for that a recall right before that went out.
That happens all the time. I've seen parts and issues that it had double digit recalls, and it's like, okay, well, version 1 didn't work, so we're going to version 2, and then pretty soon it's version 11, and then it's a redesign, and that's 12. So tell me give me more information. Is it intermittent?
It was intermittent in the beginning. We had the recall. It was an update.
Okay, it's a software.
Flash on the module.
Okay.
Yes. So 3 weeks later, we started having intermittent power steering loss, and that happened for about 2 days. And then it flat out went out completely. So I took it back to them, and they said it had nothing to do with what they did. And then they diagnosed a ground cable. And I said, well, and their price, I didn't like their price. So I checked it out. I brought it home and checked it out, and I didn't see a problem. I took it back, and they said, well, we don't see a ground problem anymore, but it's your whole gearbox. It's $2,500.
Hmm.
So I don't know where to go from here.
Well, in order for us to ground the gearbox, we just have to firmly mount it to a clean piece of metal that's there. Now, up at the battery, we no longer have just a battery cable that goes from the negative terminal to the engine. We have to have from the negative terminal of the battery, we have to go to the core support, which is the thing in front of the radiator that holds the headlights in. That's called a core support. So we're going to run from the battery cable to there. Then we're going to go to the frame down below. Then we're going to go to the engine. Then we're going to go to the firewall. So because the body is mounted in rubber, we have to ground the body and ground the frame. So
I checked all of those grounds, and everything looked good to me. I checked a lot of hidden ones. But when I took it back to the dealer, they said, well, the ground doesn't seem to be a problem anymore. It's your whole module or your gearbox that's bad.
Okay.
And I guess the problem is I never had a problem with the steering, and I know that it could be a coincidence, but they did a reflash on the power steering module, and then that system went out.
Okay.
Shortly after they did their update.
All right. So in plain language, they reflashed your computer, and in some your desktop computer, and sometimes later your monitor went out. I mean, that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because the reflash is software within the ECM. They didn't touch the steering box or gearbox or anything. I'm enamored by their ability to change the subject. You know, we didn't touch your gearbox. Of course you didn't, because you were reflashing it. That I understand. But and then, it's a ground. But, our first diagnosis was incorrect. It's just got to be the entire RAM. So it's, I don't know. If I were you...
How do I get it diagnosed, I guess?
Well, first of all, it has to be acting up to do that. So, I mean,
it's out.
Okay. That
power steering is out.
That's really not... What part of town do you live in?
Northwest Peoria.
Harkers, 38th Avenue and Indian School, that's as close as I can get you. I know they could diagnose it for you. I mean, I know they could diagnose it for you. And
And
the rack's going to come from the dealer no matter what. Most of us buy pretty deep at the dealer, so we don't have to, in the vernacular of a car repair guy, we're not going to rip your head off and cost you a bunch of more money. The idea is that it has to be diagnosed. Do we have power and ground at the appropriate places? That's really what it's all about. And most of us will plug in our scanner and talk to it, and it will say, I've lost a connection between B7 and H9. And then you look and you go, well, that's part of the circuit board. That's part of the box. Okay, good. We're there. So that's the kind of thing it is. But it's, I am tongue-in-cheek thinking, oh, first it was a bad ground, and now it's the whole enchilada. They kind of glossed right over that. And if it would have been an independent shop or a chain store, I would laugh. And if it was my own, I'd be mad. But it's just the way it is. Electronics, they're like light bulbs. How many times have you had a flashlight that didn't work and you shook it and it started working? It's kind of hard to figure out why it didn't work when it's working, and that's the dilemma you're in right now. But how many miles are on it?
119,000.
Okay. So it's been around the world, what, five times? So,
yeah.
I mean, you have to look at it from that perspective. But I also want to tell you that it's okay if you shop price on that, because there's only going to be one or two vendors for that thing. It may come in 20 different boxes, but you can shop price if you want. You don't have to worry about there's going to be a tie to quality. If it was an at-school rebuild unit, I'd buy one of those.
Yeah, and just getting it diagnosed properly, since I have zero confidence in the dealer that I took it to, just because of the ground diagnosis at first. But so, was that Harker's?
H-A-R-K-E-R, Harker's Auto Repair, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. You want the phone number?
Sure.
602-278-5556. And the phone's going to be answered by Ellen. She's the wife of Bob, who owns it. And be really nice to her. She's a very nice lady, but she doesn't put up with, you know, she's just one of those very, been in the car business a long time, but she'll be able to help you. And tell her you're looking forward you heard that Mark Salem is going to give you a 50% discount on the labor, but you haven't got the coupon yet.
And that you said they probably couldn't diagnose it, but try it.
Well, you said it's out now completely, though, right? Oh, that's right. I get the joke. I get it. You could do it.
Right.
Okay, thank you, Leonard. All righty, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I'm feeling ornery today. I'm probably going to get in trouble, but that's okay, because what's life like if you're not called to the principal's office every once in a while? Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. It really is difficult to diagnose a problem that's an intermittent problem. Intermittently, the dome light doesn't work, or intermittently, my headlights go to brights all by themselves, or whatever. Those are very difficult things. You only have two choices as a car owner. You can hire us to guess and make intelligent guesses, which means let's try the module first, or let's go ahead and run a new ground first, or let's do this, or let's do that. Or you can wait until it fails completely, and then it's a lot easier to diagnose. You have those choices. It's the same way with your air conditioning system. There are times where you say the air doesn't work good, and we drive it and we send, you know, our manager out to drive it for 2 hours. We ask you exactly how it is that you make this happen, and you described it and we did it. We can't get it to act up. It's just, we don't know where to go. Is it a blower motor? Now, that's something that happened to us not too long ago, and it was no one's fault, but if it was anybody's fault, it was ours. Well, the air conditioning just doesn't work good. That's what the gentleman said. It just doesn't work good. Come to find out, the blower motor was bad. So it wasn't that it wasn't blowing cold air. It stopped blowing air. And so it was just a matter of, we should have done a better job and talking to him. Well, does the air change volume coming out of the vents? Does the air change temperatures? Is it you're driving down the highway and it's blowing nice and cold, and then all of a sudden it just goes hot? Well, does it go back to cold? Yes, it does. Okay, we're making progress. And then you're saying to yourself, I know it can make cold air. The question is why is it going into default and then coming back to cold air? Well, where are you setting your temperature? Oh, about 70. Well, what's the temperature in the ambient temperature outside the car? Well, it's about 70. Okay, well, here, when you set it at 70, it's going to bring you from 68 or 69 to 70, but then it's going to go into a neutral mode, and then if it sees the temperature drop back down, then it will come back on. So why don't you pick a different temperature, and then tell me if that makes a difference. Yes, if I ask for 68, I get cold air all the time. Okay, fine, then that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to look at the ambient, and you're going to have to dial in a couple of degrees below the ambient, and you'll be fine. I'm not going to work on your car because there's nothing to fix. I need to fix you. And that's really what it all boils down to. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, I'm going to tell you a quick story because I got time. I bought a 2012 Jayco Featherlite trailer. It's a bumper pull two-axle trailer. It's 27 feet. The floor, front to rear, is 27 feet long. So I bought this for a family member. And because I had time, I completely renovated this. I took the battery box apart. I put new wood. I undercoated everything. I put a new battery in it. I rewired the battery box. I added fuses that they didn't have. I installed two new bus bars, one red for power and one black. I added another propane tank to it. I added a bar and a plate to secure the two tanks in the back. I replaced two broken latches to hold the exterior doors open. I put a new propane fuel gauge on it, blah, blah, blah. And then it didn't work. So I have this ultralight trailer. And it weighs 4,000 empty, and fully loaded, it weighs 5,000. So it's got 1,000 pounds of GVW. It's a side entrance. It's got a roof air conditioning unit. It's really a nice coach, really a nice coach. So if you're interested in buying something like this, I'm going to tell you right now, cost with no labor. I bought the coach for them, and then I put in a bunch of work. It's $11,884.52. So this, I mean to tell you, with respect to what I did, I went to the water heater, I pulled out the drain in the tank, I flushed it, I cleaned the electrode or the dye or whatever that thing's anode, cleaned it all up, I put new faucets, washers in, I went in and made it really easy to access the filter on the water pump that's underneath the couch. It has a microwave, it has a stove, it has a bathroom and a shower, it has water tanks, it has gray water tanks, it has black water tanks, all that stuff. I went through everything, lubed everything. Here's one thing that you'll love. It has four screw jacks on each corner of it. So I put the bubbles on the one corner, and I have this DeWalt gun that if you put it to the jack, and so instead of you cranking them up, you just pull the trigger, and it'll lift the trailer in about the blinks of four eyes. I mean, it's just really an amazing piece of equipment, and it recharges when you're driving down the road. So, again, 2012 J-Feather Ultralight, 27-foot. I'm not going to make any money, $11,884.52, and it's yours, Mark, at marksalem.com. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. He's the board op. I'm the one that's in the Barker Lounger doing nothing. He's working his butt off, so be nice to Gil because he has slippery fingers, and if you're mean to him, he just kind of slips that one button and dumps you. So it only happens once a year, but somebody will make you mad, and he'll say, "Mark Fred off your list. He went away." But like I said, maybe once a year we have to get rid of somebody who's just maybe started celebrating New Year's a little earlier or something like that. 602-508-0960. I was talking about that trailer, and again, I'm going to tell you, it's a 2012 Jayco Featherlite, 27-foot bumper pull, two-axle. Now, people like to buy stuff because I'm such an idiot, but in this notebook that I have here, I can tell you that the battery was $93.85, and I can tell you that the bus bars and the red and black bus bars and stuff was $28.99. I can tell you the year, make, and model of all the parts inside. I can tell you that the refrigerators are Norcold and the model number N-611LT. The smoke detector and all that kind of stuff. It's because this is the stuff that you need when you're on the road. You have to have this kind of information. And there's a door to cover the power center or power cable below the refrigerator. I had to put that door on. It's a new one, and I got the part number in case you need another one somewhere down the road. And it actually tells you where I bought it from and how much you paid for it. So those are the kinds of things. It's a well-put-together trailer, but and I enjoy doing this kind of stuff. This doesn't happen, but maybe once every two or three years where I end up selling something. But I bought it for someone. It didn't work out. And so I'm going to sell it. So again, it's $11,884.52, or you want, if you want to run round it up to $11,880, I don't care. But if you're looking for a trailer, and also it's going to be near the intersection of Warner and I-10, east 1 mile on the south side of the road. So you'd go to Warner and I-10, you'd go east about a mile, it's on the south side of the road, and I'd give you the address when you send me an email. So cars and cars and cars, and I think with respect to the problems in our industry are typically created by our need to generate sales. Don't forget, it's one of those things where in the old days, every 3,000 miles, and excuse the vernacular, but we got to take a bite of you. Every 3,000 miles when you brought it in for your oil change, we found, oh, you need a tire rotation, or you got a little leak here, or your windshield washer pump is broken, or you need some wiper blades. That's the way it was. Today, many of you are not called in by your owner's manual for a year. Well, we have to make stuff up at that point. And many shops, and when I talk about shops, I'm talking about, and it's not necessarily in any particular responsible order, but there's dealers, there's independents, there's chain stores, there's mom and pop facilities, and there's mobile guys. All of us are in the same boat. If we only get to see you once a year, we've lost a significant amount of sales, so we're going to try to sell you something, and we're going to try to talk you into it. And this is how it sounds in our industry. You know, you can do that, but your transmission today could be $5,000, and I would strongly suggest that you service the fluid on it every 30, because that will make it last longer, as opposed to having it filled up with sand from the beach, I guess. Because no one knows how long it's going to last, because no one knows how it's abused, who abused it, how many times it's pulled a trailer, how many times somebody shifted it into reverse at 20 miles an hour because they were inebriated. It doesn't take into consideration all that stuff. So nobody really knows. I can tell you this much. I firmly believe that your engine and anything made in the last 20 years will last well past 150,000 miles. If you don't overheat it severely or run it low on oil, virtually every engine my shop replaces has been damaged by whoever had their hands on the steering wheel. I'm only 2 miles from home, even though the red light is on and it says it's an overheat and I've got steam billowing out from underneath the hood, I can go ahead and make it home. Big mistake. Same thing with oil. Oil consumption is an issue. So if your car is using oil, and every once in a while you see a little blue smoke out of the tailpipe, you need to keep track of that, which means when you get your gas every other time, you should check the oil. But most every engine, if not all the engines over the last 2 or 3 years, they've either been abused, and most of the time the people won't admit it, but when it comes with a hole in the side of the engine block the size of my fist, somebody abused that motor. I don't care. Somebody abused it. So the motors we replace have been overheated severely or run low on oil, and they self-destructed. I don't remember the last time we replaced an engine because it's old, it's tired, it's still running, but it's billowing blue smoke or it's running on the top end of the temperature gauge. That brings up another issue. What is an overheat? And if I asked that to 100 people, I would get at least 4 or 5 different camps. But let me explain to you. When it's overheating, it's flirting, the needle is flirting with the red zone. Now, many of you and your husbands and many people within the sound of my voice, they believe that the gauge should run between cold and 50% or vertical or the middle of the gauge. That's not true, and it hasn't been true since 1996. We want the temperature of your gauge, of your engine, to run between half and three-quarter. You are best served there. And here, let me explain why. It's a science question, really. Water boils at 212. Every time you shut your car off, you're going to get a half a tablespoon of water as the air within the engine condenses. And when it condenses, it turns from a vapor to a liquid, and you're going to have some droplets of water that end up in your oil. The only way to get the water out of the oil is to boil it again. So we need to get the oil temperature up to 212 or higher. Then the PCV valve is a vacuum cleaner for the engine. Positive crankcase ventilator, PCV. The PCV will suck this moisture-laden vapor out of your engine and send it out the tailpipe. It's going to send it through the burning process, and it's going to send it out the tailpipe. There's a real benefit to all of that, and we can't mess around with all of that. But if I get lots of older guys with motor homes and tractors and all kinds of stuff like that that brag about they're running 160 or 180. That's just terrible. That's just terrible. It's just sludge on sludge on sludge. So I'm telling you, we have 30 vehicles in our fleet. That's company vehicles, personal vehicles, kids' vehicles, my wife's vehicles, mine, everything. And I'm going to tell you right now, every single one of them is going to run close to the three-quarter mark on the gauge. That's where we want it to run. And if they're set up properly from the manufacturer and we don't mess around with anything, they'll normally be between half and three-quarters. That's an area where your temperature should run. Don't tell me it's overheating because it's gone past the half mark. That's not an overheat. I don't care what your husband says, ladies. That's not an overheat. Just get them to specifically give you what they see, and you tell us that, and then we can deal with it. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines open. You got a good chance of getting one. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're going to go to the phones because Kathy called, and if you'd like to call, the phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kathy, how can I help you?
So we have a 91 Buick Park Avenue. There may be something wrong with the transmission, do you think? It's kind of sluggish when you're from stop to maybe first to third gear. So I've called a couple places, and they don't even really want to look at it. So where should my third call be to? Who's going to take a look at my transmission?
Okay, now you're going to drive it to the shop, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's working fine, yep.
Okay, then if I were you, I would strongly suggest that you go to Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington, who actually handled covered wagons in the early 1900s. And transmissions are hydraulically operated, and they used to use engine vacuum, and they used to use throttle pedal activity. Today they're all electronic, but they operate the same. So automatic, and the question is would you please drive this? Let me tell you what I want. I'd like to go as a passenger. I'll teach you how to make it happen, and then you just tell me. Now, let me ask you a question. How many miles are on it?
111.
Okay. So that's not a lot. That's not a lot.
No.
And especially because you said it was a 91, so it's not like you're driving the wheels off of it. I expected it to be, you know, north of 150 or 200, but no, that's fine. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, and I know they'll treat you right. I promise you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I got a couple of emails here, and I'll read them to you because Dick writes that every test report I've read that Tesla uses a, quote, prepared track, end quote. That would explain why their acceleration of the numbers of these cars are exaggerated beyond what I would be capable of doing on a city street. It's the track has to be really sticky, and it has to be keep the tires from spinning the best it can, which would then allow this car to go from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Then he also talks about, and obviously Dick's been listening to the show, we had somebody call in about rats and underneath the wiring, and it was Harold. And Dick said, I have a couple of bills to repair rat-caused wire damage. Apparently the wires are coated with something that tastes like peanut butter or a product that's involved in peanut butter, and the rats like it. Now I put a small battery-powered device under the hood. It's called an RIS-A-RAT. So it's RISARAT, RISARAT. It's a small battery-powered device, and it works great. So, Harold, you were the one that called in about rats and eating up your gophers, rats, whatever, eating up the wiring underneath your car. So this battery-powered device underneath the hood is RIS, RISE, I guess, or RIS-A-RAT. Yeah, RIS-A-RAT. That's what it's called, RIS-A-RAT. Anyway, I don't know what it does. It probably just makes a lot of loud music, and they don't like country western or something like that. I don't really know. And then I also got my engineer chimes in again one more time. And this, there's more than people are actually
2 minutes.
People that have my phone numbers. It makes a big difference. And that's probably what thing he says. First of all, I'm not an engineer. I am not an engineer, because in an engineer minds, this is a valid test on the Tesla. But the test would have to be conducted with tires we do not ever typically see, if ever, on a passenger car. And here's the deal. For this car to have this kind of acceleration, it has to be in the 14 G's range. And in reality, the problem is the tires are going to start spinning at 0.7. So 1.4 G's, and let's call it 14, and the tires are going to start spinning at 7. So the roadway has to be different, and tires that we would not normally see or normally be able to buy have been changed, which allows them to say that it'll go from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Chances of you doing that on Camelback are slim and none. Guaranteed. I don't care if it's the hottest day in the world and you flatten all four of the tires, you're not going to do 0 to 60. So the prepared track explanation, that and some really sticky tires might very well allow them to have that. But this is a track where you'd probably take 5 steps out into the track, your feet would then melt into the pavement, and you'd have to just slip out of your shoes and get the hell out of there, I guess. I don't know. Nevertheless, this is the kind of stuff, and one of them's all mad at me because he says, I'm not an engineer. Well, he probably drives a train, because most engineers will tell you that they can fix anything that has to do with water, heat, nuclear power, gasoline, propane, electrical. I mean, those guys are just the madams of the universe, and there's nothing they can't fix. So Jimmy is walking away from being an engineer. So I'm sorry I called you an engineer. 602-508-0960. You got a comment? Now's the time. 602-508-0960. Well, nice to see you back. 43 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about two good shops in town. They're on the opposite sides of the world of one another, and they also do completely different work. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is up at I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. I don't know that I've ever met anybody that knows as much about diesel as Nate does. Chevy, Ford, Dodge. He'll also change the oil on your wife's Escort and stuff like or Edge or whatever. He does good work. He's a guy that we can lean on as well. But if you have a diesel and everybody's hedging on what it is and there's a whole lot of guessing going on with your money, then I would suggest that you call Nate at Strictly Diesel. He'll call you back and ask him about it and see what he says. So that's the best diesel shop up in that area, bar none, if not in the whole valley. Then on the other side of town, we got Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Thompson's, Brian and Thelma, come from two families that go back to the 60s in gas station and bay days when we used to fix cars. Both of them were born in environments that had a gasoline smell to them. So Thompson's Auto Repair has been around since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. They know what's right and wrong. And there's never been an easier or more convenient way to keep your car in tip-top shape, because they'll keep track of what it needs and what it doesn't. And that list of what it doesn't is as important or more important than that list of what it needs. But they're honest and they're dependable. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Harry, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, how you doing today, Mark?
Good. Thank you. Very good.
Good hearing your voice again.
Thank you.
I just caught the tail end of your description of is that a camper trailer, or is that a toy hauler, or what?
No, it's not a toy hauler. It's a camp trailer. It's a two axle okay. Bumper pulled camp trailer. Yes, sir.
Right, that's kind of what I was. Now, do you have anything on your website that has a description and all the things that are, you know, that it has all the extras and what?
Yeah, I can send that to you. Send me an email. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark?
Right.
And I will send it to you. I have a PDF that starts with, here's I'm one of those guys that my wife makes fun of. As a matter of fact, my whole family makes fun of me. But this is the list, and I have a three-column piece of paper. AC roof, Dexter axle, awnings, breakaway switch, electric jack, heater stat, LP gas grill, LP tanks, microwave high point, and I have all the model numbers and the serial numbers and all that kind of stuff. All the way down through the refrigerator, the smoke detector, the stabilizing jacks, the stereo, the toilet. You have a Thurford Aquamagic 5 Bravura Style Plus. So I have all of that, and I have some pictures. I'm happy to send them to you.
Okay. Does that tell the year, the manufacturer, and whether it's steel or wooden frame?
You know what? You ask me that, and I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I'm quite sure it's got a steel frame under it, but I'm thinking it's got...
I meant the frame up around, you know, where the aluminum is attached to,
I don't know the answer to that, but I think I could pull an electrical cover socket off and look inside the wall there, or I could probably see the tail end of them on the bottom, or I could go up to the air conditioning. The answer is I can't tell you if it's a wood vertical and horizontal roof or whether it's metal.
Right.
I don't know.
Might be able to tell the magnet maybe through the wall.
Yeah.
Might do it. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What year was it made?
It was 12. It's a 12, and I don't have the production date on it. I'm just looking here. I don't have that on there. I'm sorry.
And it has the how long it is.
27-foot floor plan.
Okay, and it's not out. It's just normal.
Yeah,
it doesn't have.
Say that.
Doesn't have a slide out?
No, it has no slide.
Slide
out? No slides.
Oh, okay.
It's a mid entry, and when you walk in to the right, there's a large bedroom, and then there's a couch that folds out to a small sleeping.
Okay.
Straight ahead of you is the kitchen, the microwave, the stove, the sink. To your left is the dinette, and then if you go left, the pooper's on the left, and the shower's on the right, and the sink is in the middle. So it's kind of a rear bathroom model. But anyway, you can stop by and look at it if you want. We're open Monday through Friday. Just talk to Andy, my daughter, and send me, and I'll send you all the information.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark.
Are you welcome. Thank you very much. Okay, when it comes to buying stuff like that, we do lots of used car, used trucks, and motorhome checkouts. Not too long ago, we had a motorhome, and we insisted that if we were going to inspect it for a purchase for one of our customers, that they fill all the tanks with water before they bring it to us. And for whatever reason, we didn't accomplish that. We stuck the hose in the clean water tank, and we filled it up, and it held. But the gray water tank, which is the water from the sinks, leaked, and the black water tank leaked worse. And that's why it wasn't done. Those are big deals. That's a big repair. It's not easy. So it's one of those things that's what you have to do when you check out a motorhome, is you got to know what the date of the tires is. You have to know how much life the tire have on them, but is it going to be 10 years old day after tomorrow, which means that tire has to come off the road. It's not by law. It's common sense. It's got to come off the road. And a lot of other things with respect to, is the toilet part still available? The answer is yes, because I replaced a couple. So those are the kinds of things that you have to deal with. So when I want you to think about this, your motorhome that you want to buy or the trailer you want to buy, I want you to pretend you're God and you just put your hand on the top of it and you pick it up off the road and you just shake it like that for probably 40 hours or 50 hours for a month-long trip. You can imagine what's going to happen to that. So that's why it's important to have these kinds of things checked out in front of you and the electrical system and make sure the circuit breakers are not oversized. So there's a 30 where it shouldn't have a 30. It should have a 20. That means there's an electrical problem and the additional 10 amps is causing a problem, but the 30 won't break where the 20 will. Those are the kinds of things you have to worry about. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mark. Regarding the overheating and the oil problem, sometime in the last century, I built my first hot rod. I know the things I put in it. Let's just say it used a little bit of oil and it leaked a little bit. So So anyway, being concerned about that, I found a little tool or whatever it was that would hook into the oil line and tell me, well, it would actually shut the engine down because it was hooked into, I don't know, I don't remember now what it was hooked into, but I do know that when my oil got too low, it would shut the engine down. I'm curious why, you know, we got our little idiot lights that come on and say, hey, check your gauges, but why isn't something like that available for both oil and temperature now?
There are some cars that do have that, but there's a legal issue. So your wife...
The lawyers.
Yeah, your wife is in a bad part of town. It's Saturday or Sunday morning at 3 a.m., and the car begins to overheat, and the computer takes over and shuts her down in a bad part of town, and then bad things happen. So it's a very difficult situation. I think the newer model cars are going to give you a visual sign and an audio sign, and many of the newer model cars, 3, 4, and 5 years old, are going to talk to you. They're going to yell at you, hey. So then we are going to shut the air conditioning off, and if we can control the electric fans, we're probably going to turn on the electric fans. And so in a real way, we're going to do everything we can, but making decisions that may affect someone's safety or well-being, those are tough decisions to make. And I think you would agree that there are certain situations where stranding our wives in a bad part of town or in a bad place, I would much rather pay for a motor than have my wife hurt or something like that.
You and me both. Appreciate it. Good answer.
Are you? Thank you. You bet. And Gil, I didn't catch his name. What was the last caller's name?
I believe that was Bob.
Bob. That's right. I just didn't write it down, and so I have to keep that track.
I got another caller for you.
Oh, I'm ready. Who is it?
Say hello to Ed.
Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a 2020 Kona Hyundai that I've got. It's a deceleration problem that Hyundai says it's supposed to have.
Okay.
I put 4,000. I went from Sholo to Kentucky and back, 4,000 miles, no problem. I went from Sholo, and I came, as soon as I come off the rim, the front end felt like it was going to fall apart. So I thought there was a tire problem. So I pulled off the side of the road, problem. I get back on the road, same thing. In cruise control, they said you can't decelerate cruise control with the Hyundai. I don't believe that. I think there's something wrong.
Well, wait, let's...
I've gone to Hyundai.
Okay, stop. Okay. I need something better than it feels like the front end's going to fall off. Is the vibration in the steering wheel left and right or north and south or east and west? Is it a vibration that you can feel in the seat of your pants? Is it... I need a better description than the front end is about ready to fall off.
It feels like the tires are gone. You know, I mean, it just really shakes the entire car. And it's going downhill. Uphill, no problem. It's downhill, decelerating with the cruise control on.
Okay. Well, if you set the cruise control at 70 and it gets up to north of 70, we're going to do what we can to slow the car down. And I would imagine some brake activity would do that. And a fast stop or a hard application of the brakes going fast downhill would shake the front end or could shake the front end, but there's so much more that needs to be done. We need to disable the ABS and have you go drive it and see if the ABS has anything to do with this. Let's eliminate that. And then we need to look at your alignment and your tire wear and stuff like that. So I've not heard of this before, but frankly, we're a long way away from trying to decide what this is. On cruise control, most of the time we just kick at the cruise control. If you exceed the value that you set, if you set it at 72 and you're at 75, we're going to take your throttle away. We're going to just, and we might apply the brakes. We might apply the brakes. But that's a kind of a collision avoidance system, and that would suggest that the front of the car sees something that it feels like, because you didn't apply the brakes, then I'm going to apply the brakes. So I'm just unclear. Is this something that's known, that you've done research on, and it's well discussed on the internet?
No, I haven't done any of that research. But when I'm coming off the rim now, pacing, it starts vibrating really bad. As soon as I hit the brakes, you know, just tap the brake, cruise control goes off, the problem goes away.
Okay.
And I've discussed it with Hyundai and Scottsdale several times, and they say, well, you're not supposed to use cruise control when you're decelerating. Well, I went 4,000 miles from Arizona to Kentucky and back and had no problem.
Well, clearly what you've been told is a bunch of bull excrement, okay?
Well, I know.
Okay? And you, I admire you for not being blunt with whoever was talking. In every part of our industry, people will look you in the eye and pretend they know what they're talking about. And they're going to throw crap all over everywhere to try to figure, just to get you out of there. Obviously, the difference between your Kentucky trick and coming down off the rim is the weight of the car and the downhill run. So the question then becomes is what's going on? Are we actually applying the brakes? Because we may apply the brakes and it may shake the whole car. So if you gently...
I don't apply the brakes. It's just in cruise control and coming off the rim.
Okay, I know that. I don't have much time. Are you exceeding where you set the cruise control? You set the cruise control at 65. Are you approaching 70 when this vibration occurs?
No, it's... I set the cruise control at 55 because, you know, that road coming off the rim is dicey.
I don't have much time. Just answer my questions for me. Just
probably about... 58, 59, it starts shaking.
Okay. Well, that's the key right there. When I exceed, when I'm going downhill and exceed my set speed, the car is doing something that shakes the whole front end. And it could be warped rotors or something like that. So I don't know. I'd have to drive it, but the explanation you gave sounds rather suspicious to me. So I was with a bunch of friends, and they said, hey, they say, before you sign off, say, let's go, Brandon. And it has to do with a car, a guy racing a car out at the track. So, NASCAR, let's go, Brandon.